6 never, ever marks the spot.
I am altering the deep. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier.
I'm Batman.
Dracarys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top 5 Report, the podcast that wonders, for the very first time, how long it took him to put the alphabet in alphabetical order. My name is Drew. I'll be your host for the evening. Along with me, as always, my brother Peter. How are you, sir?
Here.
All right.
How about yourself?
I'm fantastic. It's awesome. Been a week. Got to watch a couple things. Got a bunch of news to cover. Not like last week, but we have a bunch of news to cover. And there we go. So
awesome. Good stuff.
Yeah. So do you want to, I would prefer not to waste too much time. So unless you have anything pressing, why are you laughing? What's so funny?
Just, I feel like I'm situating myself to give you the most awkward intro ever. So that's just why I'm laughing at my dryness basically, but yeah, we can jump into watching.
You know, what's interesting is we don't have a lot of news to cover. We have one giant story and a couple small ones. So,
oh man. Okay.
Yeah. All right. And it's more of you and I just kind of spitballing what we can think of out of this whole thing. So we'll talk when we get there, when it's news time. But what did you watch this week?
Yeah. So this week, I finally caught up on House of the Dragon. So I finished this newest season. Oh, are you still behind?
No, I have to just watch the finale.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, yeah. What I can say is I was going to hold off on that if we were going to have a bigger discussion, but that's okay. What I will say is, Drew, first of all, you were correct. The penultimate episode this season was amazing, especially that like badass dragon fight. We had a 4 or 5 way like badass dragon fight in the middle of it. Like, it was just so cool. I never expected to see like almost like a kaiju-esque battle in the world of Westeros. Like, I was just, it was so unexpected but so freaking badass. I felt like this season overall was really, really fun. Rhaenyra's storyline is really her storyline I found the most interesting, because I feel like they really situated her as an underdog and made you want to root for her. And there's other characters, like I think Aegon is like a big underdog, but I just don't know if they played up his plights as much as hers. So like this season for me, like it was all about Rhaenyra and I really enjoyed it. With that being said, I thought like there's a couple episodes towards the middle of the season that felt like a little slower to me, especially with how bombastic and crazy the beginning of the season was. You know, it was like every episode there was like major deaths and like crazy things. And the season for me has like a weird reverse bell curve, where like in the middle I feel like it was a little bit not as intense as I was hoping, but they definitely ramp it up with the last two episodes. So I really enjoyed the season overall. I thought it was awesome. I think it's either the first two episodes or the second to last is my favorite. And for the second to last, a lot of it has to do with that dragon fight, as well as a lot of the just everything getting a lot more, suspenseful and stuff like that. But I don't want to say too much again, because you haven't watched the finale yet, Drew. So, I guess I'll hold off on specifics until next week, unless you had anything you wanted to point out right now.
Not really, because you hit things right on the head there for like you said, the kaiju battle with the dragons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like the building to the Battle of Tumbleton, which is what I'm kind of really looking forward to with the finale. So we can discuss a lot heavier when we get there. So
I think the situation, and I won't say I'm not spoiling anything here, but I do think the situation with Tumbleton is very interesting as well. It's a very interesting from like a military tactical standpoint. I like that Rhaenyra's put in this situation where it's like she kind of can't do anything right, because they've basically taken the town hostage, and then you're kind of stuck there. So, but then otherwise, after watching House of the Dragon, you know, there's a ton of shows I want to catch up on. And I think I jumped into the most important one out there, which is Stuart Fails to Save the Universe. So I finally started this. I say that facetiously. There are way more important shows I could have watched, but I did. It was the other night. I kind of wanted to watch something lighthearted, and I jumped in. I watched the first two episodes of this series. They're pretty funny. The show is pretty much exactly what I thought it was going to be, which is pretty awesome. I think, especially the first episode, some of the humor was falling flat for me. But then once you get to the second episode, where everybody has that sort of like shock collar implant in the back of their neck.
Yeah,
that's where I thought it started getting really funny, especially with like Kripke, like how many times he got shocked because he was just getting pissed off at everything and stuff. But the show is great. Oddly, it's, you know, it's a 20, you know, it's like a 20 to 30 minute per episode show. Like, it's almost like they kept the sitcom format for it, but it actually kind of reminds me more of like something like Mom and Dad, Mom and Dad Save the World. If you remember that that movie from like the 90s or, what's the one where they go into a bunch of TV shows? Is that like Stay Tuned, I want to say? Like,
yeah, Stay Tuned.
The show almost reminds me of that kind of movie where it's like comedy actors and this weird, like, lighthearted sci-fi scenario. And it's really fun in that way. So I've been enjoying it. I don't know if you've watched any more of this, Drew. I imagine, based on last week, you had seen those first two episodes as well.
I'm current on the show, so I've gone well beyond where you are. So you've only watched the first two?
Yes.
Okay, what have you thought so far of the opening sequence, the theme song opening sequence, where they don't want you to skip it?
They're pretty good. I do like the messages in them, and like the first two episodes, the imagery was more or less the same between both theme songs, but then obviously the all the captions and stuff, you know, were different. And there was a couple times where I even had to rewind the theme song because I'm like, oh crap, I was looking at this image in the background instead of reading what I was supposed to on the comic book picture in the foreground or whatever. So I think they're really fun. It's definitely a good way to make you not want to skip the intro. So I thought that was pretty awesome.
It sure is. What do you think of the spoilers?
The spoilers are funny too. The best one was the first one, cause I can't remember, the girl's like boyfriend who, like, the first one is like, oh, it's Gary, right? Yeah. So it's spoilers. Gary dies. And, it's funny cause I read that and I was like, okay, is that the title of the episode? And then what's hilarious is when it happened in the episode, it actually threw me for a loop. Like, I didn't see it coming. And I'm like, but I knew that was coming. But I think they did a really good job of timing it, where it just pops in at a spot you really don't expect. So that was awesome. And then for the second episode, like, spoilers, Zach shows up. I'm like, okay, nice. And then I'm like, now I see what Drew was talking about when you said they really have everyone from Big Bang Theory in here in some capacity. So
good stuff. Zach shows up, and then Penny shows up, and you're like, okay, we're all gonna get there at some point, right? That's what's good, you know. So I'm just really enjoying it, because in the first episode Raj was in it, and you're just like, okay, cool, Raj is here, you know. And that first episode being the post-apocalyptic zombie apocalypse, whatever, I expected it to be funnier, and it was, like, so far, in my opinion, the weakest of the episodes. And maybe that was by design, you know.
I think there's it's really cool. Like, I love Brian Posehn. He's one of my favorite comedians, but his character is so, like, he's funny, but he's such a dry character, and he's got such a big part in this. And I think that's part of it, is it's just very dry humor, you know. But I kind of agree, for the second episode I was starting to laugh a lot more than the first one. So keep going. I didn't know if you had more.
I'm glad you liked that second episode with the electronic shockers or whatever, because it was so good. And I'm like, what a great comedic physical gag that really made me laugh. So
it's basically taking a full universe and turning it into, like, everybody's in like a Suicide Squad situation, except your head isn't going to blow up. You're just going to basically get tased. And it only happens when you get pissed off at other people. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
That's about it for me this week. So I'm not super heavy handed on the watching, but.
All right. So the two things that I watched that are important. The watching. I'll come back to House of the Dragon in a moment. But the first thing I'm going to say is I started Outer Banks season 5. So the final season of Outer Banks. I am 2 episodes to the end. It is a ton of fun. It's exactly what you want. It's ridiculous in all the best ways. And I'm really enjoying everything going on with all the characters and even the ups and downs. I'm actually worried about characters where I'm like, okay, this is the end, man. We could actually like lose people. Like we could like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, so there is definitely some like heightened angst, if you will. Okay. But everything's great. So far I love it. I don't know where you are with Outer Banks, but I'm telling you, man, get back on it because it's so good.
I think I need to finish the 4th season and then I can hop on this new one. But so I'm like pretty close to current, but I still have a couple episodes to watch at least. So,
okay. And then, House of the Dragon, the wife is not watching with me right now, so I kind of have to watch on my own. So that makes it difficult. Normally I've been waking up in the morning, like early Saturday morning or something, or like whatever, and like watching the next episode. So I'm a little behind, or I'll do it right when I get home from work. So I basically haven't had those opportunities to do so. And the reason I didn't do it over the weekend is because I decided to watch Obsession instead.
Oh, nice. What do you think?
Obsession is unbelievably amazing as a movie, and it's brilliant in so many ways, which I'm going to get to in a second here. But I was really blown away by performance, and I was really blown away by some very interesting practical choices in terms of filmmaking.
Okay.
When I say that, specifically referring to like shadows on faces. Like when there's a scene where she's standing in the corner and she's kind of like in the bedroom and she's kind of laughing in the shadow, and like the way her face is like distorted, but it's because of the shadow that's causing the distortion. Right. Or, and like some of the things like that they did, it was really incredible what they were doing with that. The acting performances are amazing. I really liked what you said when you talked to me real briefly about it, about the ethics and the ethical dilemmas of what it means to truly love someone. And what I think is interesting is I walked into this movie. I'm going to spoil this. So if you haven't seen Obsession yet, sorry. But I think I was under the impression that she was the one that was obsessed based on like trailer and stuff like that. And that's not the case. It's the other way around, right? He is the obsessed one and he makes a wish. So this also comes down to the price of the things you wish for, right? And he makes a wish and it comes true, and it's the, I wish she would love me, right? This is where the movie takes this brilliant turn that I wasn't expecting, where he makes the wish for the girl to fall in love with him. And this is why in the movie Aladdin, you're not allowed to have someone fall in love with you. Because ultimately it's against their will, and it creates, and this is where the ethical dilemma comes in, because it very well creates it borderlines on this crazy degree and discussion of what actual consent is, which shocked me that was even going to be a social commentary in this movie. But the idea that she subconsciously knew this was going on and couldn't fight it.
Yeah.
That's the part that blew my mind. Like, you could tell that there was a part of her, like her body became taken over by this wish and she was doing all the things, but her subconscious knew it was incorrect.
Yeah.
And was trying to combat, and she was caught in this web, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of me that wonders if she would have stayed in it just enough longer where she didn't go crazy, is if her body, her everything would have just coalesced together within the wish, right? As opposed to how that, like, the horrific way it ended. Like, what if she just, like, it just eventually, like, she just fell into it by happenstance, where, like, the wish was slowly taking over, and then she would have been stuck, where this time, where her subconscious took over, and then his guilt was like, well, I gotta, you know, I need to end this, and how do I end this? And the way he has to end it is, like, unfortunately, the horrible part, and it creates this great, almost Romeo and Juliet kind of way, but she snaps out of it because the wish is broken.
Yeah.
Right? But the idea of how, of her understanding and her being, it's almost like, it was like an outer body experience where she was trapped in the dream, but she was watching herself in the dream.
Yeah.
That's the part that I was, like, blown away by.
I almost, like, kind of equated it with the movie Get Out to, like, kind of where she goes into, like in Get Out, you go into the sunken place and you no longer, like, somebody else has control of your body, but your consciousness is still deep down there somewhere. And that's where, like, why, like, every once in a while she would get control of her body or, you know, regain that consciousness and then freak out. I kind of wonder, too, if, like, the wish went on, would she have... would it have become a thing where she was more her body, like she, like what you're saying, she falls into this wish more, she seems more well adjusted with it? Or is it a case where over time it would get worse, you know, where maybe most of the time she still seemed like she was in love with this guy, but then every once in a while she would have an outburst and that would be her true self-consciousness coming out. And over time, maybe the outburst would get worse and worse because of how long, like, her actual consciousness is trapped in there. But I'm glad you liked it a lot. I don't know if you had any other things to say. I had a few little theories about the movie that I was kind of holding back before, Drew. So I didn't know if you wanted to mention anything else.
Give me your theories, because I have one final comment, but go ahead.
Okay, so my first one is a way that I think, not that, like, the movie should have ended, but a way the movie could have ended, which I thought would have been really cool. And then the next thing is, like, a really crazy fan theory that I saw. So again, this is full-on obsession spoilers. I hope if anybody hasn't seen the movie, they've already skipped ahead. But at the end of the movie, you have Bear, who's this guy character who's basically wished for, is it Nikki? Is that her name? Nikki, to be obsessed with him. And he makes this wish on what was the little stick things called? It was like a was wishing willow, I think.
I think it was like a wish of a willow, or a willow wish, or something like that.
So, but it's basically this tiny little willow branch that comes in a package, and you break the branch and you make the wish. And so he wished for him to, or for her to love him more than anything else. And then, you know, he gets into the ethical dilemmas of, like, I've taken away this girl's will. What can I do? Can I undo this wish? He finds out that he can't really do it unless he takes his own life. So at the end of the movie, he has that one wishing willow left, like that unbroken novelty wishing stick. And he's hiding in his bathroom because he's staying away from Nikki because she's too obsessed with him at that point. And he's trying to break the stick. But because of the magic of the wish, you can't break the stick. Like, he's unable to do it and make a wish. So then he turns to, like, trying to take his own life. So he puts the gun in his mouth and he's trying to pull the trigger and he just can't bring himself to do it. So then he grabs a bottle of pills. He takes a bunch of pills and he's going to overdose. So then I'm totally spoiling the end of this movie, but this is why I'm going to talk about how I think it'd be a cool way for it to end. But he takes all the pills and then he's like, well, I'm not going to die in this bathroom alone. I'm going to go out and enjoy, like, one final moment with this woman I love. So that's basically what he does, is he goes out, he spends, like, that last moment with her, and then he, like, keels over because essentially he's going to overdose on the drugs. Now, in the movie, he actually ends up dying, right? At the end?
Yeah.
What I think would have been crazy is, what if he's about to die and he's dozing off and you see, like, his eyes close, but then Nikki sees the wishing willow in the bathroom, and through context, she's realized what she can do with that. And she runs over and she breaks it and she wishes for Bear to not die. And then cut to like this final scene where he's like maybe in a hospital bed and he wakes up and she's still there right next to him because she's never going to leave his side. And I thought that'd be a cool way to have this sort of like perpetual, like, no matter what you do, you can't escape the wish. I thought that would have been a really fun sort of ending. So that's my fan theory there.
That would actually be really cool.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking, because that's where I thought it was going. And then the movie ended differently. I'm like, oh, OK, I see what they did here. But this could have been cool, too. So that was my whole thing.
Yeah, that could have been actually really cool. I will say this. His friend wished for $1 billion.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that part,
which I thought was really interesting because he's like, hey, you know, please do this. And he was like, ha, 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 whatever. I wish for $1 billion. And then you're like, oh, my God, this works.
Yeah.
I'll say this. We know we shouldn't wish for people to fall in love with you because you can see the traps and pitfalls of what that is. However, due to the other aspect of it, where do you buy those things? Just
yeah, that's a good question. I don't remember where the film took place, but if you want to start hitting up a cult shops in the general vicinity, maybe find something like that.
Yeah.
The last thing I was going to say, the other crazy fan theory I saw online, and I thought this was wild, and I don't know if I agree with it, but I think it's really interesting. Somebody said that they're convinced that Nikki was taken over by the soul of Bear's cat. And I thought that was a really
a whole other level of like messed up, right?
Right, but the cat dies, and I think the idea is like the cat takes over her body, which might make sense with why she's so obsessed with him, why she loves him so much, why she does messed up things like kill for him and stuff like an animal might actually do. So I thought that was a really crazy fan theory as well. So those are my two tidbits, but I don't know if you had more on the film, Drew. I feel like I'm kind of taking over your review right now a little bit.
The lunch scene was absolutely horrible to watch once you realized what he was eating. You know what I mean? So there's like, look, there's some really interesting, disturbing things in the movie, but it's on like this crazy psychological level. I think everyone should see the movie. It's absolutely fantastic. It is not for the faint of heart, though. So
I actually thought it was. It kind of depends. I mean, you're right, but at the same time, I felt like it didn't seem that scary compared to other movies I've seen. But maybe I'm just desensitized. I'm not sure.
Sure, I hear you. Anyway, that's what I watched this week in terms of all that stuff. But
awesome.
Let's talk about tonight's news, shall we?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to hit you with the easy ones first, and then we'll scroll through. So first off, this is one that I'm kind of excited about. Okay, we have speaking of Outer Banks, we have an Outer Banks prequel series that is in the works at Netflix. It's going to be set 20 years before the event. It's going to explore the origins of the social divide between the Pogues and the Kooks. So if you don't know the show, the Pogues are like the poor side of the island and the Kooks are like the rich side of the island. What's kind of cool about it, I don't necessarily know if I need to see the parents because, you know, there's a lot of like, mm-hmm. it's the generational thing on the island. I don't know if I necessarily need to see that, but I think it could be kind of cool in that sense. And they could set it at a, you know, you're looking at like your late 70s, early 80s time frame. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that, or, you know, if you're looking at that 20 year back, so like 80s, maybe early 90s kind of a thing, depending on how you look at it. So it could be kind of cool in terms of like the time period that they're going with and how that plays out. So right now I'm down. Let's see how it looks, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds cool. Keep going though.
No, you're all good. The next thing is Last of Us is coming to a close, right? So we have like one more season of Last of Us coming, and then it sounds like it is done and toast and we're not getting any more of it. At least I think that's the case. I keep seeing reports that make me think otherwise, but they haven't said, I haven't heard season 3 is not happening. But we have two Dungeons and Dragons television series being worked on right now. One for Netflix, which I believe follows the Legend of Drizzt D'Urden from the famous book series by R.A. Salvatore, which, you know, that could be amazing. The other one is HBO is doing Baldur's Gate as a television series based on the video game series Baldur's Gate. That right now is apparently will be the replacement for Last of Us when Last of Us is done. So
awesome.
I don't know what your thoughts there on those. So,
I think it's super exciting, especially that we're getting more Dungeons and Dragons content like that. With that on top of the Mighty Nein and Vox Machina, there's just so much Dungeons and Dragons content, which is awesome, but I don't know. We're at a place where the more time goes on, I just feel like it's so hard to be a well-rounded nerd nowadays because it's so hard to dedicate so much time to all of the different cool stuff that's going on. And it's almost at this point where you have to pick like one thing, like you're going to go all in on superheroes or all in on anime or whatever it is. And you're not going to have any time for anything else because there's just so much stuff. So if you're all in on Dungeons and Dragons, I think this is the greatest news ever. But both series sound really awesome. I'll definitely check them out once they come out.
Oh, yeah. I think Baldur's Gate, I think, is what's going to end up being. It's going to be like a little more darker and a visceral. My opinion is Baldur's Gate is going to be a little darker, a visceral, and a little bit more on the adult side of things because of the nature of those games.
Sure.
Where the Drizzt D'Urden show for Netflix is going to be more in line with the Honor Among Thieves show, movie.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Maybe a little bit more on the serious side as opposed to the comedy angle, but I think it'll be more in line with that in terms of like tone and visual language, I guess you could say, cinematography. The interesting thing is that both series, Baldur's Gate and the Drizzt D'Urden series that'll be for Netflix, are going to take place within Forgotten Realms, so it's technically the same universe. So
right on.
That'll be an interesting thing. It's not like they're going to a different facet, right, of Game of Thrones, where not Game of Thrones, of Dungeons and Dragons, where like one's set in the Forgotten Realms and one's set in like Eberron. No, they're both set in Forgotten Realms. So I think that'll be an interesting navigation for anyone, for the layman who doesn't necessarily know Dungeons and Dragons lore, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It makes me feel like the shows won't actually ever cross over, but there will still be that sort of headcanon thing where you're just right. Like, yeah, both of these are in the same universe. So good stuff.
Right. Well, it could be interesting where in the Baldur's Gate show, if they have to go to Neverwinter, and then in the Drizzt D'Urden show, they have to go to Baldur's Gate, and you get to see two different Neverwinters or two different Baldur's Gates.
Right? Fair
that's
enough,
where
yeah.
That's where you could get some weirdness if you're keeping up with both. Like I am.
So, sure thing.
All right. So here's one that I'm really excited about. The Netflix. So the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood by Quentin Tarantino is getting a sequel about Brad Pitt's character, Cliff Booth. Did you ever see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember we talked about the sequel like maybe a month ago or something like that. But yeah,
we talked about this a couple times as updates have happened. But the sequel is going to be titled The Further Misadventures of Cliff Booth.
All right, then,
which I think is funny. It is going to be Brad Pitt is coming back to play Cliff Booth. Quentin Tarantino is writing. David Fincher is directing. That sounds
nice.
Like a win, in my opinion. The film will be in theaters in IMAX on November 25th, but it'll be on Netflix December 23rd. So if you can't make it to the theaters,
okay.
It'll be on your screens at home. You know, there you go. It'll be cool, right?
Sure thing.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm excited for that. It'll be awesome. Let's see. Now we need to talk about, here's the big one. So Paramount and Warner Brothers, this is the thing that I kept finding things in. This is the big one that we need to discuss a little bit. So the Paramount Warner Brother merger is on hold. There are states that are getting involved. State legislatures getting involved. Hey, we don't want this. They don't want this. Paramount is, pushing to move out of California. And there was a rumor that they were moving the studio and everything to Texas. It sounds like it's actually being moved to Tennessee. Let me see here. Two states, Iowa and Montana, have told the Supreme Court the Warner Brothers is frozen, cannot make major strategic decisions without knowing who will own it. Under the merger agreement, it already needs Paramount's approval for certain deals. It's getting crazy and it's getting a little hard to track as we put it all together. Let me see here. California and other states are reportedly demanding major concessions from Paramount before agreeing to settle their challenge to the Warner Brothers Discovery merger. The state reportedly wants Paramount to sell several Warner Brothers Discovery cable networks. So they're so a network, for example, would be like Cartoon Network, Discovery Channel, right? They want to keep the Paramount and Warner Brothers movie studios separate. So you'd have Paramount Studios, Warner Brothers Studios, and then things would still be separate, which is not what Paramount's original plan was. They wanted to combine everything and then keep facets separate, like HBO would be separate, you know, that kind of stuff. But there's demands from these states coming through. Hang a second. Paramount says it's open to making structural changes in order to secure the approval for its Warner Brothers Discovery acquisition, but they have not agreed, have not yet revealed what assets it'd be willing to sell. You know, I know for a fact they don't want to get rid of HBO. They want that Game of Thrones money. They want the Harry Potter money. They want DC, right? Why would you get rid of that stuff, right? But DC's tied up with Cartoon Network, with animation stuff, and so on and so on. You see what I'm saying? Like, this is some interlaced craziness. So I really don't know.
I don't know. It's weird thinking about Warner Brothers and all their little, like, you know, you go on to HBO Max and there's all the different hubs. There's, you know, your DC, your Cartoon Network, like you said, Adult Swim, Harry Potter. Like, I keep thinking about all their different, like, franchises, and I'm like, they're all gold, though. Like, why would you get rid of any of them? You know, you know what I mean?
Right.
But there might be some random bits that I'm not even thinking about, you know, just because I'm such a big fan of, like, Cartoon Network and Looney Tunes and DC Comics and stuff. There might be some weird sort of channels, like you said, that's not worth keeping. So that makes me curious as well, you know?
Yeah, well, let's talk about this. And this is where it's going to get weird. Paramount's move out of California is real, per insiders, and it's already freezing deals and productions, which is going to make the movie landscape very strange for a little bit.
Yeah,
they're not bluffing. It may take years, but it will happen. According to what the sources are hearing, Tennessee is the final destination for the headquarters, not Texas. October 1st deadline is a handful of weeks away, and the longer the merger fight drags on, the more work Hollywood stands to lose. So this is Hollywood pushing back and Paramount going, no. Now, because of that, the production's freezing, and this is where it's interesting, is Andy Muschietti, who's supposed to be directing The Brave and the Bold, reportedly said Andy Muschietti reportedly said the work on Brave and Bold is on hold until after the Paramount Warner Brothers merger has settled. So that sucks. We're stuck waiting how much longer for the next Batman movie, right? Or the Brave and the Bold Batman movie. So Andy Muschietti says this. Then he says that he'll move into another film if directing Brave and the Bold doesn't pan out. So we could lose a director over this.
Yeah.
Right? But this is where it gets interesting. Okay, hold on. Let me make sure I clicked on the right thing. Okay. The DC Bat, and then I found this. DC's Batman movie may be completely frozen. Filmmaker Andy Muschietti told him that all work on Brave and the Bold is on hold till the merger is settled. This is still a rumor, not an official announcement from Muschietti or DC Studios. But it lines up with the Paramount Warner Brothers merger agreement, which restricts long-term deals involving major IP with the studio while the transaction remains unresolved. If this is true, Batman isn't waiting on James Gunn. He's waiting on David Ellison, right? CEO of Paramount. I found that. Then I found, and like I said, this is where it gets strange, James Gunn has stated that no DC Studios project is on hold due to the Warner Brothers merger. Not even Brave and the Bold. James Gunn says, and I quote, "No, nothing's on hold. It doesn't sound like something that Andy Muschietti would have said, but the project is no way on hold." Okay. Yeah. James Gunn says that nothing is on hold in terms of DC. That came from his direct Twitter. Then, making sure I'm looking at the right thing here. Okay. Then, in the realm of them saying things are frozen and on hold, The Man of Tomorrow has wrapped filming, and it's going to be in theaters July 9th, 2027.
Right.
Okay. Like, holy cow. Like, seriously, I feel like we just heard about this, so they clearly went right into it.
Yeah.
There's also a rumor that Wonder Woman 3 with Gal Gadot is in production. Paramount is tired of reboots and wants to bet on a Wonder Woman that the public already knows. The project only enters development once the Paramount finalizes the purchase of Warner Brothers. Right? Isn't this crazy?
Yeah.
Then we have new details are emerging about what Warner Brothers could look like under Paramount. I'm going to let you comment on this in a second. This is a lot to extrapolate.
Sure, yeah.
Paramount insiders reportedly say the plan is to retain Pam Addy and Mike DeLuca at Warner Brothers, Richard Brenner at New Line, James Gunn and Peter Safran at Studios. If the merger closes, Paramount wants to preserve much of the Warner Brothers' existing leadership.
Okay.
So we have the company moving out of California. They clearly want to keep people in a position. Some people are saying things are frozen and on hold. James Gunn saying DC's not on hold. We're moving forward. Do we have a Wonder Woman? Do we not have a Wonder Woman? I saw a report that said Adriana Jorna is going to make a cameo as Wonder Woman in Man of Tomorrow, but we got this Gal Gadot Wonder Woman coming. Dude, there's a ton of stuff to unpack there. Thoughts, please.
Oh, man. There's a lot to go off of.
I wanted to stop and let you go, but I'm like, dude, if I don't get this all out, we're going to be here all night.
It's hard to have, like, a super strong opinion, though, because I feel like a lot of this isn't finalized, you know? So it's not like we've got...
Sure.
A lot of it's not, like... Except for, yes.
Pete, can you say that one more time? You actually blinked out for a second.
Okay. So a lot of this isn't like a firm, like definitely going to happen sort of thing, except for, it sounds like, Warner Brothers moving to Tennessee. I don't know if they're going to go to like Nashville or whatever, but I think that's very, very interesting. I think it's a case of Paramount doing stuff that is probably better for business, but maybe not better from a canon sense of like trying to keep the current DCU intact, right? So there's been rumors that James Gunn wants to recast Wonder Woman, and Paramount's over here going like, well, if we buy, like when we buy your company, we're not going to let that happen because people love Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. So we're going to keep her in place. And I think there's going to be a lot of that. And I think, I don't know if it's like, I'm getting the sense that like James Gunn's role might still be intact as long as his movies keep performing. But if like they don't continue to perform, they're just going to like kick him out. And now this is me assuming stuff, so it might not be accurate, sure. But I feel like once James Gunn's movies stop doing good, they're going to be like, all right, well, we're going to bring Zack Snyder in again or whoever else. But I think it's a lot of like Paramount doing stuff that makes sense from a money sense, but when it comes to like general canon and storytelling, there's a lot of DC fans who are going to be like, well, you shouldn't do this because we've got to keep the canon intact. And then you have this giant corporation like, we don't care about canon, we just care about selling tickets. And that's kind of what I'm getting from this a lot, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. There is a degree that they want to sell. They, you know what I mean? Like, we need to sell tickets. We need to get people's butts in the seats. We need to put out stuff people want. And it sounds like they want to listen to the fans on one level because of all the Snyder cut nonsense stuff going on. But is that real or is that all conjecture because it's the internet?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I don't know. This is, I just think it's kind of crazy. I don't know. Do you have any general sense about or like any like big picture thoughts about like this whole merger and where we're at right now? Like, do you think it's cool that they're planning on going to Tennessee, for example, and stuff like that? Or like
getting out of Hollywood and going to like somewhere like Tennessee for the sake of like doing something like that? Sure, that could be kind of cool. I'm not opposed to like the main headquarters being somewhere else. I don't know if they're building the actual studio lots. Or are we just talking like offices? You know what I mean? Like, we don't really know.
Oh, that's
what that
a good
means.
Call. Yeah.
So that could be interesting. It also could be a tax thing, and that's why they're leaving, right? Taxes in California might be too high, and they're like, you know, if we go to somewhere like Tennessee or Texas, we can get lower taxes and actually, like, you know, save some money in putting these things together, you know? So there's the interesting thing there, but at the end of the day, and I said this at the beginning, we as the consumer have no say in any of this. All we can do is ride the wave and go, where's the cool thing that I want to watch? Like, how do I access the cool thing that I want to watch?
Yeah.
That's ultimately the game we play. So at the end of the day, where's Game of Thrones? Is it still going to be on HBO? Because that'd be awesome. Like, and how do I watch HBO? Right?
Sure.
Do I have to get a new subscription fee? Is it being combined with Paramount Plus? Is it going to be its own entity still? That's cool. You tell me, right? Being an HBO subscriber, do I get a cool little discount over here to get the Paramount Plus app? You know what I mean? Like, how does that work? And vice versa. You know, like, that's the big thing here, right? This whole thing could end up falling through because of all the pushback from the other states worrying about monopolies. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. I do think there's a level of like Hollywood and California has had so much power over like the entertainment industry, though, too. So I almost feel like, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be good or bad, but I do think it's interesting if they're moving Warner Brothers headquarters. What is that going to change with the movies produced? Like, is it going to be like kind of like a different voice? Like, there's probably going to be a lot of people in Tennessee who are going to jump into certain roles, and maybe we'll be getting different perspectives on, you know, the artwork that's produced. I think stuff like that's kind of interesting. So like, I'd almost like sometimes maybe argue that like maybe Hollywood has had more of a monopoly over things and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Right. But no, either way, I just think it's really interesting. And you did say one thing, like, we don't have power over this in any way, which I think is really interesting. And the one thing we do have power over is we can vote with our dollar, right? So if you are a big fan of like James Gunn's DCU, you should be going to see all those movies. You should be buying the merch and stuff like that. You know, maybe you didn't like Supergirl, but you know, there might be someday where James Gunn isn't in the role that he is, and you might wish that you did support Supergirl, because you know that has a factor in like how long that's going to go on and stuff like that. And I've said in the past, the more you support something, the more chances that thing will have to be rebooted. So like, if you don't like the current iteration of like, I don't know, any franchise like Ninja Turtles or something, if you still support it, you know that in 5-10 years, they're going to reboot the Ninja Turtles anyways. But if nobody supports it, they're just not going to ever reboot it. So it's kind of this weird thing where I almost think like if you're a huge superhero fan, you should go see like every superhero movie you can, even if you don't like the movie, because you still want superhero movies to be made and you don't want it to become this forgotten genre that they just don't think is going to make any money.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I look at it, at least.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, that's all we got for the news tonight, man. So we're going to see how this all pans out. We'll keep you updated as we learn things. Some of the Paramount stuff is like, there's not even a point talking about it, because sometimes it's rumor. Sometimes it's just, you know, you're just like, okay, yeah, we've talked about how things are frozen. Okay, I don't need to know this title's frozen and that title's frozen. You know what I mean? That's kind of a global thing. That everything's on hold when they're trying to figure this out. But this is a messier merger, I think, than Disney and Fox or Disney and Lucasfilm. Yeah. Or, you know what I mean? Like, this is a big ball of wax. It's kind of like,
this is going to be a huge shakeup when it finally goes through. Like, this is really going to be a big shakeup for the industry. but it's moving so slow that it's like, is it going to feel like a shakeup, or is it going to be this slow, like multi-year sort of easing into this new stuff, you know? So that's one way to look at it.
Absolutely. Well, all right, man. That's it for the news. Do you want to talk about tonight's list?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
And now for the top five.
All right, everybody. Peter, this was your top five list pick this week. What are we talking about?
Sometimes you just got to do it. You think of a really goofy, silly list and you're like, I'm just going to move forward with this one. And this list I thought of while playing Fortnite with my kid. And right now in Fortnite, it's all about the sprites, right? So you have these little sprite sort of companion characters.
Not to be confused with the beverage. Go ahead.
Yes. So the sprites, they're these little companion characters or like spirits, I guess, that you can wear, like they sit behind you like almost like a backpack. Or if you're familiar with Fortnite, they'll like kind of like sit in that back bling spot for you. But these are little characters that when you play Battle Royale, for example, they will give you like various power-ups. Like certain ones can help heal your health or your shield. There's different ones that have all sorts of different attributes, whether, you know, when it comes to like the speed or certain skills you might need for the match and stuff like that. And it's a really fun thing. And I think it really feeds into like, you know, everybody's about Pokemon, like Pokemon in general right now, like Pokemon's really big. And I feel like these sprites in Fortnite still feed into that sort of thing, you know, where you play the game and you collect different sprites. And then while you're playing Battle Royale, you either have to win while the sprite's in your possession or you need to extract it out of that match. But it really feeds into this sort of collecting sense. But it's also just like an interesting kind of character, like these little small companion characters who give you powers. And it made me think, let's do a list of our favorite characters that are kind of like sprites from pop culture in general. So we're not talking about actual Fortnite sprites tonight, but we're talking about the characters within movies and TV shows and maybe cartoons and video games and whatever that kind of are like sprites, you know, those sort of like small companion, cutesy sidekick sort of characters. Maybe they have magic powers. Maybe they give your character, you know, maybe they give the main character magic powers as well. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're just kind of a cute little sidekick character. I thought this was a really out there, weird list, and I thought it would be fun to talk about. I don't know if you have any big, like, takeaways from this, Drew, but this is one of those just, like, super goofy lists where I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's see what happens with this one.
It is a super goofy list, and I really enjoyed putting this together.
Yes.
And, I actually thought about this. I did not write down powers for them.
Okay.
You know, like, so your sprite characters all have some kind of an ability, right? Like, so the water sprite, if you're standing in water, it refills your health, mm-hmm. right? Like, I didn't do that. I was like, hey, this would be a fun game. You know, there's not a lot to say about these characters other than, hey, it could be kind of fun having them follow you around.
Yep. Absolutely.
Maybe offer some insight. You know what I mean? So
good stuff. I'll keep going.
No, I was going to say, I do have two honorable mentions. That's all I was going to say.
Oh, yes. So do I. And the one thing I will say about my list is I have a lot of just very classic, like well-known characters. And I kind of wish I was able to sprinkle in some weirder, obscure bits, but I did keep it to kind of the classic. So this conversation might go pretty fast, but if you have two honorable mentions, Drew, you'd probably have to start, but what were you saying there?
I have to start. Do you have two honorable mentions? Sorry.
Yeah, I do as well. So
I expect this list to go quick, so sorry, I have a feeling it's not going to be this crazy long conversation, but I'm hoping that we get a little bit of a not match. Like, I think we might match on maybe one of these, and I think the rest of it will be, we're going to be all over the place. So
I've got like four that I feel like I thought I was going to match with you on, so we'll see how this goes. Okay. But
so my first honorable mention, I went with Batmite. Classic. This is me being a Batman fan, and Batmite would be fun to hang around just for the commentary, but Batmite also would be an asshole, so he'd be hard to get along with, I think. And yeah, there you go. So
classic, great call though. Batmite, I feel like, really fits that sort of like definitely like a sprite sort of character from outside of Fortnite. So this is a really good call and a really funny visual. And like in Fortnite, they do have Batman sprites, and they honestly kind of look like Batmite, to be honest. So good stuff.
Yeah, right. All right, man. First honorable mention.
Yeah, so when I pitched this list last week, I did bring up Pokemon because I said, you know, if you have trouble putting this list together, there's like thousands of Pokemon and every single one of them could be a sprite. Now, with that being said,
I did not choose any Pokemon.
With that being said, I don't know that they all are that sprite-like, but a lot of them are. A lot of them are small.
Well, I mean, that's Snorlax, let me tell you.
Absolutely. For my first honorable mention, I went with my favorite Pokemon, but this one is probably the least sprite-like of them all, but I didn't care. I just wanted to pick my favorite one. So I went with Mewtwo, which is definitely the least sprite-like and the least of a sidekick as well. So this is definitely a cheat, but I always loved Mewtwo. And for me, I think a lot of it has to do with that sort of like, you know, he's a lab experiment. You know, it's that monster movie level. Like, this is this all-powerful Pokemon that was made in a lab who gets loose, and then, you know, chaos ensues from there. But again, this one is a very non-sprite-like character from a very sprite-like franchise. So definitely a cheat, but I just figured I'd mention it. So there you go.
Sure. No, I hear you. You know, it's funny, and I don't think I knew that was your favorite.
Yeah.
Brain went Mewtwo. He's going to say Mewtwo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I did say, I did mention at a family party that that was my favorite. And I told your son that I felt like that was a cap out. And he goes, no, that's a legit choice. So I'm like, okay, fair enough.
Take it from the younger generation to tell you that.
So. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. But what do you got for us next?
So my next honorable mention is 343 Guilty Spark from the Halo franchise. Guilty Spark, or 343 Guilty Spark, is the floating eyeball construct that follows you around for a little while and acts as like a guide.
Oh, right. And
then,
okay.
And then he eventually betrays you and is your enemy. But he's got a cool laser that comes out of his eye and whatnot, but he kind of floats around and kind of guides you along and gives you history on the ring and like on the flood and like tells you all this stuff. And then later he betrays you, obviously, and he's the bad guy. But in terms of a companion character, if you were to put him in a video game and have him follow you around, it might not be a bad idea because he could give you insight. He has the laser that he can protect you with, you know, that kind of thing. So, and
awesome.
He's cool. And regardless of him being the jerk that betrays you in the game, he's cool looking, right? I always thought the floating constructs from the game were really cool. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's awesome. And this is a cool pick. I wasn't expecting this one. And it's also like kind of like it's not obscure, but it is, because when people talk about Halo, it's usually relegated to a couple different characters or alien types. And you don't hear this character brought up a lot. So that's pretty awesome. Sure.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead. What's your next round moment?
Yeah, so my next one, this one's just kind of pretty funny, and it was too good not to include, but I went with C-3PO from Star Wars, but specifically in The Empire Strikes Back when he gets dismantled and Chewie has to carry him as a backpack
yeah.
the whole time. So that's what I went with my next honorable mention, is C-3PO in backpack form. I thought that was too good not to include. So,
yeah, that is the most sprite-like C-3PO is.
Absolutely.
But yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Okay. So I'll get this one out of the way then, since you mentioned C-3PO, but for my first actual pick of the night, I'm going with R2-D2.
Oh, classic. Nice.
Not because he's can ride on my back. But he is the R2-D2 has always been, in my opinion, in the Star Wars universe, like the family dog, right? The loyal friend that's
yeah.
gonna follow you around, that's gonna help, that's gonna like, he's going to give you the power-ups, man. He's got he can shoot electricity out of his electrodes. He can open up doors. He can close things. He can lock stuff up. He can, you know, access information. He can, you know, R2's got a lot of features there. He can fix your ship while you're flying it. Like, there's a lot there. So, yeah, R2-D2. Why wouldn't you want him around? So,
yeah. Amazing choice. Great call for all the reasons you said. And R2-D2 is such a clutch character because you watch the, if you watch Star Wars and you really pay attention, he's responsible for so many things when it comes to saving the galaxy. Like if you actually put on paper, like all the different things that he did that saved the main character's butts so many times, like it's actually kind of crazy. Like if R2-D2 wasn't there, the galaxy would be in a much worse place, I think. So something to keep in mind. So good call.
Very much so. He's also a great secret keeper because he made it through all the movies and knows everything.
There you go.
He doesn't tell anybody anything. what's your first actual pick of the night?
Yeah, I'll go with another well-beloved character from a very big sci-fi franchise, but I actually went with E.T. the Extraterrestrial. And this is one of the first characters I thought of, and I think E.T. fits the mold for being a sprite-like character. Maybe he's, you know, he's not as small as the sprites in Fortnite, but he is, like, you know, shorter in stature, and he has so many different powers when it comes to, like, he's able to heal, he can make the kids, like, bikes fly and stuff. Like, he's got so many different random power-ups that he uses throughout the movie, but E.T. is, like, a great character, And I just thought this one just fit the mold so well, you know, I had to pick it. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on E.T., Drew, but that was my next pick for the night.
This is one that I didn't think of.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't think of E.T. at all. But hey, he's got the healing factor, so he can help you out in a pinch, right?
Absolutely.
To stick with the and I'm not trying to do this. I'm not trying to piggyback on your picks at all. But
no, it's
to
all
stick
good.
With the alien kind of vibe there. It's almost a gimme. And I'm trying to get rid of my gimme characters up front. because they're the, oh yeah, of course, right? And I want to save the other ones. But I'm going with Gizmo from Gremlins.
Awesome.
You know, he'd be fun to just hang around with. I don't know what services he could provide, to be completely honest. But, you know, Gizmo, man. Like... There you go.
I think Gizmo provides two services. One being that he is just, you have to watch his facial expressions, but if you watch his facial expressions and can kind of like personify what he's trying to say, he always knows what's the right thing to do. So when it's like, oh, you know, I don't mind leaving like my leftovers in reach of these other Mogwai, like Gizmo is going to give you a look like you shouldn't do that. Or, you know, like, you know, there's water being spilled somewhere. Gizmo is going to go as far away from it as possible. So if you pay attention, he'll teach you how to care for Mogwai. But also, like, if you think of Gremlins 2, when he gets all Ramboed out, you know, when he has the, he puts the bandana around his head and he builds, like, the little...
bow and arrow.
Yeah. So Gizmo's a badass. He's not, like, one of those characters who has a lot of, like, supernatural powers, but he does have skills and stuff. He does come in clutch when he needs
powers.
To.
He just won't, he's got supernatural powers. He just won't let the Hulk out.
Yep. There you go.
Right?
awesome.
He watches his diet. He doesn't eat after midnight. Anyway. Man, go ahead. What's your next one?
Well, actually, I should have mentioned, so we matched for Gizmo, okay. So that makes my next pick really quick. So
perfect. All right. Okay. So the next one for me, I went with, this is me jumping on the Final Fantasy bandwagon, like I do on occasion, and I went with the Moogles from Final Fantasy.
Yeah. nice.
I think you knew what I meant by that when I said that. It was either the Moogles or the Cactuar, which I always thought the Cactuar was funny because I don't think I really understand why that's a thing in Final Fantasy, but I let it go because it makes me laugh. But the Moogles, they're just, I don't know if I'd call them companion characters because when you find them in the games, they're a lot of times they're running shops. They're not really hanging out. They're not really following you around, but they're always like little Easter eggs throughout. Like when you watch Advent Children, the one girl has the like stuffed animal of, right. Mm-hmm. Or, like when you play Kingdom Hearts, the Moogles are running the shop. You know, so you have these really interesting, you know, bits there, here and there, but I always think they're fun characters and they're just kind of, they kind of shake up the world a little bit. So to have them run around, they're kind of mischievous, you know. So there you go.
Yeah, fun stuff. This was a really good call. We were doing some other list, and I remember you mentioned the Moogles. And so as soon as you said it, I was like, yeah, nice pick. But
yeah, it was a list recently, too.
Yeah, I just can't remember what the subject was, but I'll probably think of it like tomorrow or something. But yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. All right, man. What do you got for me?
Okay, so
we're rolling through this list fast.
yeah, I can tell. For my next pick, I'll go with another classic character, and this pick goes into 80s animated series, actually, because I went with Orko from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, and Orko's such a good character. Been mine. He's such a good character. He's a wizard. He has magical abilities and stuff like that. Every once in a while, he does help out, like in a battle or something, and he's just such a badass recognizable character, but also he's always there to show up at the end of the episode and talk about what's the lesson we just learned and stuff. But Orko, just such an iconic character, and I've always had a fondness for this character. Like the character design, he looks amazing, and he's just so memorable and cool, you know. So that's my next pick for the night.
Yeah, that's, man, that should have been my pick. That's a bummer. All right, so I'm going to go with, and this one I think will surprise you because I was thinking about it. I was like, huh, and I wrote it down. I'm going to Tinkerbell.
Oh, very good call, yeah.
She is the perfect example of what you're talking about. I think she'd be cool to have around, just even like one. And like in the cartoon version of Tinkerbell, she doesn't really talk, right? I mean, she talks, but you don't really understand her. And then you have the live action version with like Robin Williams in the movie Hook, where she can talk and everything. I think I'd want to do a combination, let her talk, but have the cartoon version. Right.
Yeah.
But I think she'd be fun to have around in terms of insight, guidance, all that stuff. I don't know what powers I want to give her, but Tinkerbell would be cool to have on my shoulder and kind of fun to, you know, chat with here and there. So there you go.
Awesome. Yeah, good call with this one.
Oh, there you go. What do you got for me?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, for my next pick, I actually went the comic book route for this one. I actually went with Kaji Da, which is the name of the Scarab. Basically, the Jaime Reyes version of Blue Beetle. It's basically the big beetle, like this piece of alien technology that bonds with Jaime Reyes. Like it bonds with him and creates this alien suit, and then he becomes that version of the Blue Beetle. So it's this ancient like alien technology like piece of equipment that comes to Earth, but once it attaches to you,
it's on your back.
Yep, it's on your back just like a sprite or some back bling from Fortnite, and it bonds with you and it gives you powers. But there's also the level of like Jaime Reyes, once he becomes Blue Beetle, he kind of seems like almost schizophrenic, and it's really because he's arguing with this voice in his head the whole time. The Scarab actually, you know, gets into his nervous system and talks to him like through his thoughts and stuff, and it's this really funny thing. Like if you watch the Young Justice series, I think they had a lot of really great moments where Blue Beetle's just basically arguing with his suits the whole time, and it's pretty hilarious. Typically, the suit's depicted as having a male voice, but in the live action movie, they had an interesting choice where it was actually like a female voice for like the actual Scarab itself, which I thought was pretty funny. But yeah, this one I thought was a really badass one, and this one really fits the mold in so many ways for being a sprite. There's it attaching to the back, it giving your character like a number of different powers. Like I thought this one was just too good to not fit the mold, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right on. And this is a perfect one. This is a perfect example of what you were, and it gives you powers.
Yep, exactly. Good stuff.
All right, for my last pick of the night, this is the one that definitely gives you powers. This is the one that I think will surprise you. This was probably my favorite one that I wrote down. I'm literally picking this only for the fun commentary, but I went with Rizzo the Rat from the Muppets.
Okay, keep going.
There's really nothing more to say. Rizzo would be awesome to hang around, get sugarcoat things. He would give you like, yeah, he would be a lot of fun to hang around with. So yeah, just to have him follow you around. Maybe if he's riding on your back, actually, Rizzo would probably get stuck to you with some glue or some sort and actually be on your back. You know what I mean? And you'd just be stuck with it. So there you go.
I mean, if you watch Muppets Christmas Carol, Rizzo is basically attached to Gonzo the whole time. You know, Rizzo is like kind of Gonzo's like right hand man. And Gonzo isn't necessarily that crazy about it. Like sometimes he actually annoys Gonzo, but it's definitely kind of the relationship you're talking about, which is pretty funny. I'm kind of confused though. Rizzo can give you like superpowers or something. Did you say that, or was that more?
No, I said I was more of a joke. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I feel like you might be more steeped in your Muppets lore than me. So maybe, I'm like, okay, maybe, what am I missing here?
Maybe the power of confusion. You know what I mean?
Like, there you go. No, I like it. Rizzo is a hilarious character, and I think he's that fun sort of annoying character who, you know, I try to aspire to be that level of annoying when I hang out with my friends. So good stuff.
Yeah. All right, man. What is your last pick of the night?
Yeah, so my last pick, next to the Blue Beetle Scarab, I thought this one was like the biggest shoe-in, so I was actually surprised you didn't pick it, but I actually went with Grogu from the Mandalorian series, you know, Baby Yoda himself. This is a character who
right in terms of following you around. So
yep, following around Din Djarin and helping him with all of his various exploits. But Grogu, I mean, he's got the Force powers, and he does a lot of badass stuff. Otherwise, like if you think of like the random like in the movie Mandalorian and Grogu, like first of all, like he has that whole rescue sequence, you know, where he saves Din Djarin on that planet, and then like there's also like, you know, the chase scene on there and stuff. And I just thought he was such a great character to go back to. So I don't know if you have any deep thoughts on Grogu, Drew, but yeah, good stuff.
You're dead on with Grogu. I feel like his powers right now are very limited. As he grows, so like he's gonna be like your one and done adventure care buddy for a little bit, and then because he's gonna get tired and need to take a nap, but he's got his little thing to follow you around, and he's got his little car seat that floats along with you. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, yeah.
I mean, he's a great add-in. He's a perfect choice. He's exact like I feel like I should have grabbed him too. So.
Fair enough, but really good stuff. And now that we're talking about Star Wars, I'm actually thinking that like Rada the Hutt from the Clone Wars movie could have been a good one too, because I think there's a section of that movie where Ahsoka actually carries him on her back, like in a backpack itself. So that's something else to think about. But no, good list in general. I mean, this was keep going.
I mean, Babu Freak, man. Why wasn't that, you know, pulled out?
I was thinking about going with Ewoks, but I think when I put my list together, I was trying to lean more towards like powerful characters, you know, so that kind of held me back in certain ways. Sure. But yeah, definitely a lot of lovable little creatures in Star Wars, which is one of the reasons we love it. So,
yeah. All right, man. So I get to pick for next week. I've actually been enjoying this weird back and forth. You give the weird list and I give the serious discussion. and it's been going on for the last couple episodes, which has been kind of sending us back in the serious discussion, because I've had a lot of fun discussing the production side of film.
Right.
I've been enjoying it. So, and I've looked it up and I'm surprised we have not talked about this yet, but I'd like to talk about our favorite film makeup things.
Okay. Nice.
Right. Like achievement in filmmaking, achievement in makeup for filmmaking. So it could be whether it's TV or movies. I don't really. But like that thing where you're just like, oh my gosh, did you see how they did that kind of thing? You know, whether you're talking zombies in Walking Dead, or you're like, maybe there's a character in Lord of the Rings. You're like, dude, that was all practical. It looked amazing. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be really cool to discuss that. So like our five favorite makeup achievements, I guess. So.
I love the list idea. I've been like for a while playing with how do we talk more about like special effects, you know, makeup in in movies and TV. So I think this is a really fun list that's right up my alley. So I'm excited about this one.
Cool. All right. That does kind of bring us to the end of this episode. So I know it feels like it's a little short this week, but hey, there's nothing wrong with a shorty episode, right? Do you want to close this one out, Peter?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. Everybody, do us all a favor. Check out our website, top5report.com. There you'll find links to our social media, along our email, top5report@gmail.com. We are on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible. You can subscribe to us in those places. If you do, you will not miss a single episode. You can also leave us a review. We love those 5 stars, but we understand criticism because it helps us get better and it makes the words we say feel important. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Drew3927. Peter, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at NinjaPierre. And that's where I'll be spreading the word that I've got Grogu's and Gizmos aplenty, or whatever it was the Little Mermaid said.
All right, everybody. The Top 5 Report. I'm Drew.
I'm Peter.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.